Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we're joined by Louis Sherry Roberts. Louis is Head of Quality Assurance at Wind Technologies, member of Betway Group. Welcome to the show, Louis. It's really good to have you join us today. Thanks for doing this.
No worries. I'm glad to be on the show.
Yeah.
It's my first podcast, so yeah, I'm excited and yeah, whatever it brings.
Exactly. Right. Well, I mean, could you give us a bit, just a quick insight into the business and what that is for people who aren't aware?
Yeah. So like, I work for a company called Wind Technologies. We're part of the Betway Group. Betway is the brand, essentially. And they're a kind of online gambling company. So we deal with kind of casino, sports as well. So we do a sports book as well as a casino book. But kind of Wind Technologies essentially is one part of the cog,
right,
that offers that service to the brand. So like things like our landing pages, our home pages, our kind of responsible gambling applications and so forth. Kind of we look after those sort of things from a Betway side. Then we've got other parts of the Betway Group that look after kind of the sports app as well as the casino app as well as the websites. We deal with lots of different parts of the website as well. Lots of different moving cogs, but ultimately Betway is an online gambling site. In a nutshell, that's what it is.
You know, I was speaking with Michael Gillett earlier today and a bit yesterday, and he was saying that one of the most important parts of the business and how you work is making sure that people are safe when gambling, where they don't take it too far, and using AI and technology. And I think that was really impressive. And, you know, how much do you think about that in your role?
Yeah, I think it's quite important. I think Michael hit the nail on the head there, because we are responsible. Like, we want everyone to have fun at the end of the day, right? That's what we're here for. But we're not here to take everyone's money. We're here to kind of make sure everyone's having fun, but in a responsible manner. So we need to make sure there's all these kind of checks in place to make sure that you're not underage and you're not kind of going beyond spending beyond your means. And as you mentioned there, kind of using AI and kind of models to kind of detect some of these users and how they're abusing us and so forth. So we can kind of look at that side of things. We actually have a data science team that's headed up by one of my friends, actually. That the fact that he's heading up that team and creating models and so forth to kind of stop people like him. Wow. Kind of get through, but as well as the other side, from the responsible side, making sure that we are kind of, we've got all the KYC in place, making sure that there's stopped places or there's limits that you can put in places as well to stop you from going beyond your means and spending extra that you don't have and so forth. I think that's the most important thing. And that's one of the most important things actually on our goals as well. We've got our CEO, one of the goals is crystal clear compliance, or clean sheet compliance, I should say. And that is basically to make sure that we're very compliant across the board on everything and super clean, super squeaky clean. And it's good as well, because it means that we are a responsible gamer. We don't want nothing to fall through the cracks. We want to make sure that everyone is having fun on our websites, but in a responsible manner. And yeah, all of us kind of, all of us here, it's embedded into us, like the goals are embedded into us, but also kind of, especially us, like me being head of QA here, I have to drive that down the line as well, and just make sure that everything we do is in a regulated and compliant manner, which is super important for us in this industry.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And, you know, I just want to find out how you got started in your career and what your journey has been like to get to where you are today as a head of quality assurance.
Yeah, it's been funny actually, because I left uni and typical, as a uni student, very naive to things. So you think that you're going to come out, get your degree, and you're going to go straight into a professional place of work. So I've done business information systems, which a lot of kind of IT related web building, software building and so forth was included in there. So I thought, I'm going to come out, someone's going to snap me up straight away. Then I got into reality and I was like, oh, this is not actually happening. So which was frustrating trying to look. And then I realized after a few months, actually, I'm not getting anywhere. So I kind of had to get a job somewhere to kind of start making some money. So I got into kind of working in phone sales. I was pretty good at sales, which was great. Then went into banking from there. done a bit of banking sales. At this time, we went to a stage where I was still looking, but no one wanted me again because I'm fresh from uni and no one wants someone with that experience, which was super frustrating. So I always said to myself, if I'm ever in kind of a position of influence, that I won't let the same thing happen to kind of people that are out of uni that are looking for kind of work and so forth. I always said that because it was very difficult for me to get to get into some sort of professional place. But I went into banking, and in banking, I kind of rode the line. I kind of got promoted through there until I got into kind of like the private banking side of things, which was really good. But again, it was long hours, lots of drinking afterwards, to kind of de-stress from the day, from long days. But whilst I was in banking, I remember talking to kind of one of my friends at the time, and he was in doing QA at that point, and it was testing. He was a manual tester. And I just found it intriguing and interesting because I always used to ask him, like, what is it, what you're doing and so forth. And he used to try and explain it to me, but couldn't really get the words out. So I remember him, he gave me this manual. It was like 1,000 pages long of, he goes, this is what I do, read it. So I remember on my way into work, into my banking role, every day I used to read this on the train. So my journey into work at that point was 2 hours each way.
No way.
So I had 4 hours of reading. Yeah, it was insane. I was from Essex.
What?
So going into London, yeah, it was a mission basically to get in. But I done it. He gave me time to kind of read this 1,000-page manual or booklet or whatever it was explaining what testing is, the different types and so forth and blah, 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 blah. And so I kept on reading this. The more I read it, I got more interested in it. I was like, this is something that I could do, actually. I've got a kind of wandering mind. It's software testing. I like software. I like technology. I like to break things. So it was good for me. So I kept on reading. And then afterwards, I was like, what's the next step? So it was like, you're going to have to get some training for it because no one's just going to hire you like that. So like, okay. So I remember actually it was my friend's house I used to stay. So there was a training facility in North London. I used to go there. So I used to do my banking job Monday to Friday. And then from Saturday to Sunday, I'm in classroom basically 8 till 5 each day, learning kind of what it is, the different types of testing, the processes and so forth. And kind of I've done that for 2 months. I believe it was 2 months, yeah. And then it was kind of a case of after that, they helped you do your CV and so forth. And I started applying at the same time. But again, a lot of people are not coming back to me. And at that time, I'd met my missus that I'm with now. And she kept on pushing me. She works in HR. So she kept on saying, motivating me, keep going. You're going to find something. Because I was getting kind of distraught afterwards because no one's taking against someone with no experience. But then kind of Santander came in and they had a contract offer where they wanted a manual tester to come in, follow some scripts and just report bugs and so forth and do it. So it was very, very basic, but it was good money as well. Like I was like, wow, a contract role at that point, I don't have any experience. Fine. They needed someone to come in and do it for like 3 months. That 3 months extended to 6 months and so forth. But I wasn't learning anything there. It was more kind of like just following something, add in here, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't learning anything. And I wanted to be in somewhere that I'm going to learn and grow myself. That's what I'm always at. So at the same time, I'm reading outside of work, but it's very difficult because I don't have any direction on where to go and what to do and what to look and so forth. I remember still trying to apply for stuff. And then it was Wind Technologies at the time. They called up and they were looking for an IT application tester. So I was like, okay, cool. Went in for the interview. Everything was great. I had a test to do. Got it. And we just built up that rapport with the test manager at the time, the HR person. And then I think it was an hour and a half later, 2 hours later, I left and they had a call from them saying, we'd like to offer you the role. And I was like, wow, ecstatic. The pay was less than what I was getting in Santander, but I thought, this is somewhere where I could learn. It's a permanent role. It's somewhere where I can grow and learn, just from the discussions I had with the kind of hiring manager at that point. Offered, started, it was a team of 5 at that point, consisting of also all application testers, all manual testers, and my manager. My manager at that time was super technical. And I came in and I always kind of let them know that I would want to be going to management at some point in this role. So I'm going to do everything I can to try and get in there at some point. And it got to the stage where I just kind of head down. We were going through kind of the launch of like the rebranding of Betway as well at that point. So kind of put my head down and taught myself a lot of stuff. And And when it was time to move on to the next stage, which is this technical side of things, again, that was something that I taught myself, to which then I taught kind of someone that I was working with that was in my team, another kind of IT application test or changed to QA engineer at that point, and showed him how to do certain things, which was good. So there was a collection of us all doing automation together at that point, to which then I got promoted to a manager, but it was only looking at front-end technology at that point, to which then at the same time my manager left. So I was like, whoa, what's going on here? This is so overwhelming. So it's like, now I've been promoted to a manager, I need to learn of someone. They're not there. I'm only in charge of front-end, so the back-end is going to suffer as well. And it was just very difficult. So I just said, look, I can either kind of fail here or kind of swim.
Yeah.
I can either sink or swim, essentially. So I kind of just started learning outside of hours, doing more training myself, going on kind of training websites, Pluralsight, Stack Overflow, so forth, YouTube, just teaching myself. And it got to the stage where I was able to kind of build this framework internally to kind of share with the whole team, front end and back end, and then kind of do a workshop and train them on how to use it and so forth. To which my manager at the time, who was the head of development, saw that, promoted me into QA manager, which meant I was looking at kind of the whole team now. Yeah, from QA manager, we were looking for a head of QA, and the role was open for 320 days. I had people in my team saying, why don't you go for it? I was like, I'm not ready. I want to learn from someone.
Yeah.
320 days, we went through so many interviews, offered three people, to which they were supposed to start a week or some of the, like two of them a week before they were supposed to start, one of them 2 days before they were supposed to start, they pulled out.
Really?
Some ridiculous excuse. One of the excuses was, oh, my wife has decided she doesn't want me working for a gambling company now. So, okay, cool. You didn't know this before you went through the whole process? which is kind of an interesting thing. Oh my God. I was like, I was really excited because he was really like someone that I would have learned off and the team would have learned off as well. But in the end, anyway, kind of like it went by and I was like, let me go for it. I feel that I'm ready now. I'm confident now. Yeah. So I went for it, interview, got the role, and kind of everything since then has been kind of, yeah, history. Like it's just, yeah, it's gone with the flow.
Yeah. Well, there's a few points that I want to pick up from that.
And, yeah.
You know, from what you were saying, it seems like, you know, your career has been, you know, it's easy for me to say, but it seems like it's been pretty smooth, you know. It seems pretty, you know, you seem to have that mindset where you do learn and push yourself, and, you know, you seem to be the type of person that always is looking for the new thing and won't just kind of settle, which is amazing for anybody, especially in technology. And there's a point around this, which is you mentioned, you know, self-learning, and you've done a lot of learning outside your role and previous roles. And I'm just curious to find out if you still do that, if you still have to learn new technologies and find new resources for new developments.
I mean, in my role, my main responsibility now is obviously looking at the vision, looking at kind of the strategy and where commercially hat on, thinking where I want to go next with QA and so forth. But I believe to be good at that and to understand it properly, and especially be able to kind of offer your opinions with your team, you have to do that research yourself. And sometimes you can't be done during work hours. It has to be done outside of hours. And so I spend my time reading the blogs, researching into new tech and so forth. Not as much new tech, but kind of looking at new ways and processes of doing things and where QA should get to, or based off all the kind of readings that I've done, then make an assumption of where I would like QA to get to within WinTech anyway, based off all the other stuff that I've done. And I think that's super important because it means that I can go in and sit down with my architects and the leads and have that kind of discussion with them and go and understand what they're saying, as well as kind of being able to offer my opinions and kind of offer solutions for myself. Do you know what I mean? Which may not always be the right thing, but I can at least sit down and have that conversation with them. But the main thing is knowing what's out there and knowing how we can kind of shape the department together. And it starts from my level, really, because I'm the visionary of QA. So I need to kind of know what is out there or where we want to get to at least, because the other guys, they're super hands-on technical with the product every day. So they're not necessarily thinking of that. They might be thinking of what the next technology is, but not necessarily where they want QA to go. And that's kind of where people think that might be easy, maybe easier said than done, but there's a lot of kind of effort that goes in to ensure that it is the right thing to do and we're not just wasting time and going down a rabbit hole.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I presume in your role, there's more than two parts to your role, which I'm about to mention, but there's more than this. I would predict that, you know, you have part of your role, which is, you know, looking at the team that you're managing and, you know, helping them. But then you also have another huge part of your role, which you were kind of mentioning just then, which is looking at new technologies. So you've got one half of yourself, which is looking down in the business and making sure things are running right at the moment, right at the at this time. Then also you've got to look ahead as well. And yep. So I guess my question is, how do you kind of juggle those two aspects of your working life?
It's tough because essentially during the day, my diary is usually filled with lots of meetings with the team, but also with the development team as well, or the project team or the product team, just kind of understanding how we can work on certain things, prioritizing a list of what to work on and so forth. And then sometimes my day doesn't actually start till 4 or 5 p.m. And then that's when I kind of do my day-to-day kind of stuff of I've got a to-do list, whether it's looking at where the next kind of where QA is going to go next and researching on that side of things and reading certain blogs and so forth, or kind of researching new tech that I kind of then go to the guys, okay, cool, I've looked at this, this does this, can you go and see, BOC it and see where it goes from there. So sometimes, like I said, there's, which I mentioned before, you have to kind of, for me anyway, I have to kind of work outside of the working kind of hours to ensure that I'm on top of things. I always want to be ahead of the curve. And to do that, doing it during working hours just doesn't fit. So I have to do it after working hours. I have to do it on weekends sometimes. It just depends when I get the chance to, I will do it. Just because I want to stay on top of things. I want to stay on trend. I want to make sure that it's fresh and new.
Yeah.
And the guys are exciting as well. I want to keep my team motivated and enthusiastic and we can't be stagnant. We got to be dynamic and we got to move with the times all the time.
Well, exactly.
And I think that's why me and Michael get on so much with him being the head of development, because he's a techie as well. And we speak the same language and we want the same things and we want everything automated or to as much as possible anyway. So it's excellent for us. So the relationship just kind of is just natural.
You mentioned you want everything to be automated. And it's funny that even just in like recent years, anything that I do in my job that I have to kind of manually do, I immediately think, surely there must be a way to automate this, you know. Obviously you're talking about a different scale, but even my day to day, I'm just thinking, surely you must be able to automate this. But sometimes you just think, oh no, it's just manually, you have to just do it manually, which is like annoying.
It's always there's a saying, I think you might spend 5 days automating something that you can do in 10 minutes manually. But you spend like 5 days or automating it just to make, yeah.
I've fallen in that trap before. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, so, you know, like new technologies, it's happening all the time across the whole of technology, right? Engineering, all that kind of thing. New tech, new frameworks is coming out all the time. And, you know, we've learned about how you manage your time looking at finding new developments, etc. But how have changes in technology impacted quality assurance?
It's been very difficult, actually, because historically, QA or testing, it's a very manual role, so non-technical at all. So what you have in the market is a lot of kind of testers that are all manual driven and they have no kind of technical skills whatsoever. And a lot of them don't even want to have any technical skills. And there's a lot of products that have been built for QAs that don't have that technical skill. That's a playback and record and it builds code for you and stuff. The problem with that is it's never accurate. There's a lot of flaws with it. It's very flaky. And it means that you can't debug it yourself if it goes wrong, which it does all the time. So it has been very, 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 very difficult. But I think the one thing that we have here is the fact that we have people that are willing to learn. People that are willing to learn and people that are willing to take the effort to kind of train. I'm very much kind of a techie, but I've never been that. I started off manual. I had to learn myself. So the guys, there's a lot of guys here that I've started off manual as well and had to learn through kind of training and support and so forth. So I think it's kind of come a long way. Like QA engineering has come a long way, because it means that we have been able to kind of sit down, have the time, but also have the training as well. Like we've made sure that we've been on these training to understand basic coding knowledge, whether it's C# training or Java or whatever, kind of understand that side of things. But also working closely with the developers as well has helped, and working with the developers in the team, because you see certain things that they do and you're like, oh, how do you do that? And so forth. But also kind of we've got Pluralsight and we use Pluralsight all the time to make sure that we're learning from there. But the main thing is like the QA team here is more of a family. So we tend to support one another. There's a broad range of skill set. We've got a performance testing team that they're a lot more kind of technically savvy than the average QA engineer, just because of they've had to be technical from day one as a performance test engineer. There's no playback and record. It's literally you've had to write some sort of code before. So when certain things that we want to do that may be a lot more complex and out of kind of the comfort zone of some people, they may get involved and come in and help and go, right, what are we trying to solve here and how are we trying to solve it? But we've also got developers that are willing to help as well and willing to kind of help us write automation and so forth.
Yeah, it seems that, you know, there seems to be a common thread through what you've been saying. I mean, around, you know, like I was speaking to Michael earlier as well, it seems that almost everyone at the Betway Group seems to have like a willingness to learn. You know, it seems that it doesn't just stop when you get the job and you just do the job. It's everyone seems to be kind of forward thinking, progressive.
Yep.
And, you know, doesn't just, like I mentioned, just stagnate. And is that something that you absolutely look out for when you're hiring new people?
Yeah, 100%. I think regardless whether you're coming in, and it goes back to my point where I said, if I was ever in an influential position to be able to give someone a chance that's willing to try, that's really enthusiastic, because someone coming in as a graduate or a junior, they're gonna be a lot more hungry than someone coming in as a senior potentially, right? Yeah. And that person or that individual coming in as a junior, they may be the ones that, they may be the future as well. They may be the ones that are kind of going to completely change things. So that is what we look at. I mean, obviously we look for mid. We want someone to come in and hit the ground running straight away. But if we interview someone and we feel that they're not at that level, but their willingness to learn is there.
Yeah.
It's amazing. That's what we want. I mean, we've just kind of hired a couple of junior QA engineers. They've been internal, but they've come from service desk, and it's like the stuff they've been in the role 2.5 months, but the stuff that they're doing is just blowing our mind, because we're like, wow, this is insane. That willingness to learn is definitely key. It's we can't stay stagnant. Like, we got to kind of keep going and want to push the boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I want to talk about, you know, how you lead your team and also some of the challenges between going from leading a team that aren't technical to a team of very technical people. I mean, what are the differences there in management and how you lead those people?
I think this goes back to the point where I was saying, like, it's me wanting to be ahead of the curve as well, so I can have these discussions with these guys, because essentially a non-technical person and a technical person, this is what used to happen with QAs before. QA used to be the dumping ground, essentially. The developers finish something, send it on to QA. Here you go, QA, you test it and then send it on to someone else to release, right? The culture that I tried to create here is, no, we're not that. Let's discuss first what we want. Let's have the option to work on this together. Let's build the test together and then kind of work on releasing it together. Or we take that responsibility and we test it and we release it and we monitor it at the end and so forth. So we've had to build up that respect coming from kind of a dumping ground where you're just a tester, last minute they get it, whatever, blah, blah, blah. We bypass them if we need to and so forth, to kind of, oh no, it can't go out without QA. And that's where we are now. It's like, it can't go out without QA. And I think the hardest thing is in managing that. It's just technical people, they demand a different type of respect than non-technical people. That's just how it's always been. That's why developers have always been kind of up there with, if you look at, like, they've got that sought after respect already because they're technical building something. Whereas we come in last minute and test it and we break it and they're like, oh, who are these guys coming in? They don't even understand how it works and so forth. And we're like, no. So that has its own challenges in this. But then I think the challenge for me was the training side of things because I was new to management as well, new to management and kind of getting everyone on board. But that was the challenge. That was the challenge for me and not knowing kind of like how they're going to take it or how long it's going to take for them to kind of transition over. But the willingness to learn again has been there from everyone. And because we had the support bubble and everyone was working with everyone, it made it a lot easier. It simplified it and made it quicker and made the journey a lot more kind of, I wouldn't say easy, but it was more manageable. And it also helped us because it also helped that we had the ability to kind of introduce automation from not being pushed to introduce automation. We wanted to introduce automation because we started doing it as a group of five before. And then we were like, okay, let's do this now. And then when we went to our tech director with it at the point, we're like, we can do this quicker, but you just need to give us time to do it. And he was like, yeah, sure. He came from a development background. So he was like, oh yeah, if you can automate it and it's quicker, then do it.
Yeah.
So we had that back in from there already but that was from a technical side, because if I went to him and go, oh, we need 5 days to test this. He always used to question, like test this manually. He always used to question and go, no, you don't. It's like, what we do is manual. So yeah. There were the challenges there. I think that challenge was there with the stakeholders and with my managers at the time, because my manager at the time was the head of development, and he was very technical. So if I went to him and go, we're going to take a week or 2 weeks to test this, he's like, do it in 3 days. We're like, but we can't. It's like, but he wouldn't understand that. But if I went to him and go, oh, we need 5 days to kind of automate this, but then it will be quicker going forward and it would, and when things are quicker to be released and time to market decreases, it was like, yeah, fine. So I think two different types of challenges, but I think the hardest one I'll probably say is just the fact that like you have to be, I feel that managing a technical person, you have to definitely be able to speak the lingo and be ahead of the curve. Otherwise, the discussion you're having with them is pointless. They may not reciprocate that respect back as well. And they may not think that you know anything as well at that same point. And I'm someone that likes to kind of offer my opinions and understand what is going on. So I don't want to be one of those managers that comes down and go, we're doing this now. And they're like, but why? And I'm like, I don't know, because I saw it somewhere. So, So do you know what I mean? Like that would be a challenge in itself. So I think the bit was definitely kind of, and it's still a challenge now because I've got to keep ahead of the trend again still. And this is why I keep doing, not for myself, but also kind of to be able to kind of reassure my team, but also kind of work with my team as well.
Yeah. And exactly. It's so interesting. And, you know, we've touched upon it before, but I want to talk about, you know, your leadership style, because, you know, I find it really interesting when people go into a leadership role, because the first day that they go into a leadership role or a management role is the day that they are least experienced in that job.
Yep.
Because it's totally different. Managing a team of, say, engineers is totally different to being an engineer, isn't it?
Yep.
So it's a completely different role. Almost entirely. So
yep.
I guess I want to find out, in your opinion, has your leadership style changed over time?
No, because I've always been this, look, I've always kind of gone into a leadership role with my personality. So I'm bubbly. I like to speak to people. Kind of, I'm friendly. I'm very, very laid back. But the one thing that I do kind of pride myself on, and I make sure that the other guys kind of do the same thing and they've learned from that as well, is honesty and be direct. There's no point lying. If you don't know something, say you don't know it. Fine. You're not going to look bad or worse by saying you don't know something as to trying to lie and say you do know something and then getting caught out. Then you look like a fool.
Yeah.
And then being direct. I think direct is the most important thing, because you can't be around the bush if you want something done. You got to say, guys, let's get this done. If someone's messed up, hold your hands up and or pull them up straight away and go, you have messed up. Like, we got to look at ways to kind of ensure that this doesn't happen again. And this is the kind of this is the characteristics that I kind of want the other guys and kind of helped them and urged them and supported them and guided them and kind of pushed them to kind of have as well. Because it just means that things are a lot more efficient.
Yeah.
A lot more efficient. But yeah, being laid back doesn't mean that you're a pushover. It just means that anyone can come and talk to you. But then it's that directness that's the key. Because if you're not direct, then you can be essentially, you can be a pushover as well. Because
you can be
seen to be someone that either doesn't know what they're talking about or someone that's really fluffy about stuff and is, yeah, and is not going to get anything done, essentially.
It's interesting, isn't it? It really is interesting, like, how you have to think about these things and how you have to think about how you're coming across. And it's almost like it's a conscious decision, which is kind of strange because, you know, if you didn't know much about management or if you, you know, never been in a management role, I mean, I'm talking about myself here. What if, you know, say 5 years ago, and you look at leaders and you look at managers, it almost seems like their style is kind of innate. It almost doesn't seem that they even think about it. And it just seems natural. But it totally isn't.
And that's where you, get it. I mean, it's bringing your personality into it mainly. There are natural leaders and there's leaders that are not, but they work hard to becoming a phenomenal and a great leader. And they work at it and they know what to work out, what they need to improve on and so forth. And I think that is key. Like I've, like I said, it's my personality that I bring to it. So the same as I am at work is the same I am outside. But also kind of, I've looked at my surroundings and I've learned from different people and I've taken certain things of how they kind of maybe approach certain situations in certain things, because I feel that I've grown from that and I've learned from that, because there might've been situations where there were situations in the past where I'll read something and I feel myself getting frustrated and emotional about it straight away. And I'll be writing something and I'll be like, whoa, hold on a minute. Let me just take a step back here. And that's something that I learned off one of my colleagues that no longer works with us, but she was always someone that was really kind of very, like, she articulated herself well and she'll always take a step back first just to understand the situation before she like kind of dove into it. So that has helped me, as well as kind of in work, has helped me in my personal life as well, kind of not going head first into situations. And I think that's been great. Like, I'm learning every day as a leader, and what we want to be is we want to lead from the front. We want to be transformational leaders. And that's what the company is kind of training and leading at the moment, transformational leadership. And that's what they want. But yeah, it's, I'm constantly learning all the people around me. Michael, like, he might be new to the role, but there's amazing stuff that he brings to the table as well that I take from there. And do you know what I mean? And it's just good to get these little bits from different people to shape your own style.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not sure if this is right or what your take will be on this, but there's a part of leadership which I think is sometimes just overlooked, and I could be wrong here, but I think a big part, I've been corrected on this before, so this is definitely just my opinion. A big part of leadership is being like likable. Is that something
Agreed.
Is that something that's
the two things really? I mean, there's a couple of things. So I agree with you and I also disagree at the same time. I agree with you because if you're likable, it makes everything easier. Like, you can approach anyone and they're more likely to give you the time of the day, right, to get stuff done. If you're not liked as a leader, it's either they're afraid of you or they don't respect you. If they're afraid of you but they respect you, that's a different thing. It's just like you just come across as someone that's not a likable character, but you know your stuff, but then you might just be really intimidating, essentially, right? And that also gets the job done. So it very much depends. I mean, my style is, I want people to like me. I'm a likable person, but I don't mind if I have to make that bad decision and go no or call someone out or whatever and not be liked for it, as long as I'm looking after my team or looking after the department. That doesn't faze me at all. So, but I want to be a likable person because I feel that things just get done a lot easier. And when you message people or email people or talk to people, they're a lot quicker to respond to you. I actually have one of the things that, because everyone thinks being a leader is easy, right? And it's actually funny when, like, a couple of the guys that we kind of progressed together, and now they're leaders. And I remember kind of in their first couple of months, they were like, wow, this is hard, Louis. How are you always smiling? I go, because leadership is not easy, but I don't want you guys to see that. Like, your team should never see like when you're stressed or frustrated or emotionally drained or whatever.
That is very true. That
a good leader should never show that. So you should always try and keep all of that in. And then kind of then go to your leader about it if you're kind of frustrated and stuff, and then talk to them and air it out there and let it go there. But don't ever let your team see that, because your team are part of you and they would kind of see what you're doing. You're supposed to be leading from the front. So if they see you frustrated, angry, drained, demotivated, they're going to feel the same way as well. So it was, I always remember them saying, like, it's really hard. Like, you've got to think of so many things. You've got guys, like, you might have something set up for the day, but then you have to deal with something that's happened as an emergency. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of context switching. Like, it's just one of those things. And I think a lot of people appreciate it more being in the role and being like experiencing it.
Yeah. Oh my God. You've given such amazing advice there. I'm absolutely going to hang on to everything you just said there.
Awesome. Thank you.
That's really good. You know, it's stuff that I've never really considered before. But when you were saying, like, you know, never show that you're stressed or anything like that as a leader, I can think of leaders that have, you know, led me and I've always thought, how are they always so happy and relaxed? And, you know, people are pulling them all the time from, you know, they must be getting like 100 emails a day. They must be getting yanked at every opportunity, like physically, like to chat to, and then they're on the phone. You just think, how are you not like really, really stressed? But it's just, they don't want to come across stressed because they can't really.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting psychological thought there. I think, you know, I've kept you here long enough, Louis, but I want to get one more question out of you here.
Sure, go for it.
And it's, you know, as your time as a leader, what would you say has been your kind of proudest moment or your greatest achievement?
There's a few, but kind of one of them has probably been progressing with the guys I started with. I think seeing them progress is rewarding for me. And to progress not just once or twice or whatever, but progress through to what they want to do. I remember one guy in my team, he wanted to be a scrum master at some point. And it was one of those things that he had the technical capability to go on to become an architect. And he wanted to be a scrum master, but it's one of those things where I had to support him and not let go that I don't want you to do this, but I had to kind of support him in a way. But that also told him that I think that you'll be best suited here. But anyway, in the end, he didn't end up doing that, and he kind of went through the ranks, and now he's a senior test architect, and he's kind of one of the guys is respected in the team. Everyone goes to him for advice, and I've grown with this guy, and he's someone that I trained and we worked with together on the same products and kind of gone up. So I think that's basically seeing him flourish and grow. That's been rewarding for me, and that's probably one of the proudest moments, I would have to say. But also kind of another one really that touches on that is just kind of how we've gone from nothing in wind technologies. When I say nothing, I mean that gone from a place where we take in weeks to kind of deliver something to kind of hours and minutes to deliver something. So I think that has been definitely special, because a lot of hard work has gone into there and a lot of kind of direction has needed to gone into there from myself, from the team, from everyone involved. And just growing the team collectively as well, from a team of 5 to kind of 40 plus people now. I think that's been definitely kind of one of the proudest moments as well. And there's still more to come. Sure there is.
Incredible. Oh God, I really could. Honestly, I've got so many points that I want to ask you about and talk to you about, but
It's been fun. I've loved it.
Yeah. Very well. I've taken up far too much of your busy day here. I can't believe you've managed to squeeze out an hour of your day already to do this. It's incredible, really.
Yeah, it's gone quick as well. It's gone really quick.
Yeah.
Really quick.
Well, that's a good sign. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Louis. I've really enjoyed it. It's been, I nearly swore then, really interesting. So thank you.
No worries. No, this has been, honestly, it's been really good to kind of get that out. Like, it's good to have these things. I never think of these things until we kind of talk about it. Which is insane. And it's just the amount that we've been able to achieve as a team here has been unreal. So thank you for helping me see that again.
It's interesting you say that, because a lot of people on the show, their feedback has always been like, it's quite a cathartic experience because they have to think about things that maybe they've not thought about since they started their career, you know, some things.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a really interesting retrospective kind of analysis of your own career. That makes it sound, you know, as if I'm some kind of psychologist, but... Anyway, right, I'll let you go now, Louis. Thanks so much.
Awesome. And thank you, Ben.
Thanks for listening to Ben Shorey's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.